This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. In September, President Donald Trump announced he would be ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, known as DACA. This Obama-era program protects young immigrants who entered the country illegally as children from being deported and allows these individuals, often referred to as dreamers, the ability to work in the U.S. legally. The president's order gave Congress 6 months to replace DACA with a new law, and so far there's been little movement. In this program from September, we spoke with Steve Laxton, an immigration lawyer from Sparta, John David, director of Compassionate Community Faith Alliance in La Crosse, Gerardo Hernandez, a DACA recipient from Sparta, and Jocelyn Calixto, a dreamer from Wisconsin Dells. So there's been a lot of confusion, I think, about DACA and just immigration statuses in general. And so I wanted to start the conversation by kind of clarifying, you know, what DACA is. And so, Steve, I wonder if you can kind of explain a little bit about the program.
Sure. DACA was instituted in June 15th, 2012. It's an executive order, meaning it's not a law that's been passed by Congress. It was an executive action by President Obama. And what it did, in essence, was allow what's called deferred action, meaning a discretionary action not to prosecute people for deportation if they met certain qualifications. And those qualifications were that the person entered prior to turning 16 years old and prior to June 15th, 2007, which was 5 years prior to President Obama signing the executive order. You had to be present between prior to June 5th of 2007 and the time at which you applied, and you had to be present on June 15th of 2012. You also had to be under 31 years of age on June 15th, 2012. There's many criminal disqualifications, which is complicated. But basically, you need to have a minor record, if any, to be able to be eligible.
I wonder if you can also explain kind of what being a recipient of DACA or a dreamer, you know, what that kind of allows people to do and maybe what benefits and services they are and are not eligible for in the U.S.
Yeah, the principal benefit that you get from having DACA is you get employment authorization. With employment authorization, you can get a valid Social Security number, and then you can seek a driver's license if you're eligible in most states, Wisconsin being among them. So you can live, you know, fairly normally in the sense that you can drive, you can use that Social Security number and work authorization to obtain employment, or, it's helpful for so many things in life. So those benefits have been really important to people.
And John, I wonder if you could talk about how many recipients of DACA, or, you know, as they're often called, dreamers, are here in Wisconsin and maybe here in the Cooley region. Do we have a sense?
Sure. It's difficult for us to say at Catholic Charities we're serving people in southern Minnesota, where in that diocese they just don't offer immigration legal services. We're serving people in northern Wisconsin and western Wisconsin, people of the Superior Diocese, people of La Crosse Diocese, regardless of faith background, if any, and everything. I don't have a firm number for Wisconsin from our work there. I would say we know that at one time it was estimated statewide there's 100,000 people who did not have legal status of those, and nationwide we've always heard that number 11 million. You can always anticipate 1 in 3 of those will have a family member who is a citizen. I don't know, Steve, if you've heard any better numbers for Wisconsin.
I looked at some numbers from CIS. It indicated 7,600 in Wisconsin. With 6,300 renewals. Yeah, I don't know how definitive that is, but the information is apparently from the Immigration Service. I left out a very important eligibility criteria for the DACA. You have to have also have been graduated from high school or have a GED or be in school. So that was an important element as well.
Mm-hmm. And joining us today are two recipients of DACA, and we're so excited to have you guys here and be able to kind of share your experience. And so, you know, Gerardo, I wonder if you could, you know, talk a little bit about kind of your experience about, you know, when you came to the U.S. and maybe why you immigrated here.
So I came here in 2005 with my my mother and my three-year-old sister. It was a bad experience trying to cross over. And once we got here, it wasn't the best either. It was hard to learn English, learn another language. Growing up, I had to like find a way to work in a job when other people had to go through their summer vacation. Even on the weekends, I had to find a job to try to help out the family as much as possible. And when the Dream Act came into play, or DACA, it changed my life completely. I remember I was working on a farm. I used to work from midnight to 10 a.m., 7 days a week. And the day I've heard about it, I remember I called my friends, and everybody was like, it's a trap. That's what everybody called it. And they're trying to get your information so they can attack you or deport you eventually. And the way I seen it as an opportunity for me to finally put these dreams ahead. I think that's what they called us, dreamers, as well. I finally seen a way out, and I was like, if I have 2 years to have anything done, I prefer living 2 years than living in the shadows for another, I don't know how many years. So I'm very happy I did that, and my friends ended up doing it as well. And it's a long road so far, but.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, wanting to take that 2 years rather than, you said, living in the shadows. I wonder, how DACA has maybe changed your life in that way of not maybe living in the fear of, you know, of someone discovering your immigration status.
Yeah, so that's the way I seen it. I seen it as living in the shadows because I couldn't speak to anybody about it. I went to school, nobody understood what I was going through, and I was kind of scared to even say it out loud. So sometimes I would even lie, say I was born here, due to the fact of people retaliating against me. So when DACA came into place, I seen it as like I finally can get a license, and when I got my license, I was super happy to not look back and see that. Police officer and, you know, start shaking. I'd rather live those 2 years out as much as I can. And now, thanks to DACA, I'm able to go to school. I have a pretty well job. I work as a legal sexual assault and legal advocate in Sparta and try to help out other people as much as I can. It's changed my life completely.
And Jocelyn, I wonder if you could share a little bit about your story about, you know, what age you or when you came to the U.S. and kind of what brought you here.
Well, I came to the U.S. when I was 11, 2001, 2002. I came here with my parents and my four siblings. There's five of us. And basically, my parents wanted something better for us, somewhere where we could be, you know, safe. That's the main reason. It was hard, you know, everything is different. You're not used to anything, and you see people, like even talking, you see people talk and you're like, wow, what are they saying? I don't understand anything. It was hard, but we're here. And as a child, you get used to everything so quickly, so fast, and you adopt a lot of things that you weren't used to at first. And like he said, you know, DACA's a great opportunity for us. Like he said, you see it as, okay, maybe it'll end, but I want to live and do as much as I can, you know, during that time. Now I have my two children. I have two little ones, and I see it as, you know, I'm going to go as far as I can so I can give them the best, you know, that I can.
I wonder if you could talk about your first reaction to hearing about DACA. If, you know, if you had a similar reaction mm-hmm. Gerardo did about, I don't know, maybe having concerns about it.
Yes, I did actually. When I heard about it, I did not have a good reaction. I was scared, just like him. I thought, why would I give them my information, my family's information? you know, and all of that. Like, it actually took me, I think, a year or two to apply for DACA because I did not believe it. I was thinking, it's too good to be true. This can't be true. But my sister finally convinced me. She has DACA as well. She convinced me that that it was real. She got her DACA approved before me, and she's like, you know, this is real. They're not lying. So it was hard, and I tried it. I went to Steve, and he helped me with it, and I am blessed to have that opportunity. Yeah.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking with recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program and experts in immigration law about the local impacts of President Trump's decision to end DACA. We're here with Jocelyn Calixto, a dreamer from Wisconsin Dells. John David, immigration attorney for Catholic Charities, Steve Laxton, an immigration lawyer from Sparta, and Gerardo Hernandez, a DACA recipient from Sparta. Jocelyn, I wonder if you can talk about how your life changed after receiving your DACA approval.
It completely changed. I was able to first get a work authorization, and I was able to get a driver's license. I was able to get a better employment, which, you know, I'm thankful for. And just, you know, you're not afraid to be yourself. Yeah.
And so, you know, in light of the recent announcement that DACA will be ending in 6 months, Gerardo, I wonder what your reaction was to that decision and maybe what concerns you have.
I was very sad about it. Not so much for myself, for my friends. I have very close friends, family members, that all, you know, you could just see them in their face, see it in their face that they were just, you know, shattered at this news. That life is going to change back. The way they see it, life is going to change back the way it used to be. They're going to be scared about getting pulled over every time just by getting the license plates checked. They're going to be scared that they're going to have to be working super bad conditions for very low wage, and they might not even be used to that anymore. So, yeah, I was just mostly afraid for my family members and close friends. It's just shattering to hear that news.
Have you been, pursuing any other options, or are there any other options? Or is it kind of a wait-and-see game to see what happens?
There's not very many options for dreamers, unfortunately, unless they get married and unless they have any other type of way to get a visa. It's not very many other options for us other than that at this moment that I know of anyway.
Yeah, Steve, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about kind of the decision to end DACA. You know, what options are left for dreamers?
Well, it depends greatly on their personal situation. One of the things that DACA provided was what was called advanced parole, which is essentially a permit to travel outside of the country. Many dreamers came in with their parents. The largest part of them, I think it's safe to say, came in without being admitted to the United States. And admission is an important concept under the immigration law because it would allow you to attain status here in the United States without having to depart and deal with potential unlawful presence issues. So one of the things we did with some of our DACA people was suggest that they take advanced parole if they had a legitimate reason to travel outside of the country. Those that have, and this has ended now, it ended on September 5th. There was no extension of that whatsoever. Those people that have taken advantage of that now have an admission to the United States. Should they marry or have some other development in their life that would allow them to seek lawful permanent resident status, they can do that in the United States without issues of unlawful presence and the need for a waiver. So that's one of the things that we suggested to, our DACA clients that they do, and a number of them took advantage of that. You know, going ahead, I guess, you know, defensively, I mean, certainly we hope that there's some legislative movement on making DACA permanent or providing a pathway to lawful permanent resident status and then citizenship. There's several bills that are out there that I can touch upon later. But in answer to your question, you know, by definition at this point, DACA people have 10 years of presence in the United States, which can be important defensively for what's called cancellation of removal, which is a defensive possibility in the immigration court. If you have what's called good moral character, 10 years of continuous presence in the United States, and you have certain family members, which are children, parents or spouse who are United States citizens or lawful permanent residents, then the immigration judge can cancel any deportation action against you and in discretion grant you cancellation of removal and then lawful permanent resident status, for which if you obtain, you can apply for citizenship in 5 years.
John, you know, these are all very detailed, you know, I guess, laws, and there are a lot of regulations around this. And so obviously I'm imagining DACA recipients, you know, need resources to be able to navigate this system. What is the availability of these sorts of resources like in our area?
Sure. We have them here in La Crosse. Anyone can come to La Crosse, talk to our Immigration Legal Services, seek an attorney like Steve. Any member, it's recommended, of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, people who are familiar with all these different laws. But in our area, our Catholic Charities will also make trips sometimes out to communities with high populations, or will venture to where, say, a church offers worship in Spanish, which the majority of our DACA recipients in our area are Latino, so many people feel safe going to the church to find out more, say, whether it's in Wausau or Arcadia or other places we've been, to go to a safe place where immigration enforcement authorities, police, are not going into just randomly searching for people. So our Immigration Legal Services can help people with those DACA questions.
Do we have enough services? Do you think that, you know, as things change, we might need more? More immigration law services or other types of resources?
What we're able to offer at Catholic Charities is coming out of the collection baskets of Catholic churches and donations and other places. I know in Wisconsin there's very few immigration attorneys. I think there's maybe 24 statewide, and that's pretty incredible, that can speak Spanish in their office or go to immigration court if somebody is in removal proceedings. And when you consider how large Milwaukee is and the next urban areas that follow after that, that's a real lack of legal representation. And it's worth knowing for everybody, just because they may be arrested by immigration authorities and end up in immigration court, still 1 in 3 will get out of immigration court with a green card like Steve's talking about that's available to people. So it's important that people know they have rights, whether or not they are a citizen, both to legal counsel, to remain silent and not hand over a case to them, because ultimately, just as we find 1 in 3 people without legal status at the moment have a citizen or family member with legal status in their immediate family, likewise, 1 in 3 are going to get out of immigration court with a green card, but it's important they know their rights and it's important they get legal counsel.
Jocelyn, I wonder what your thoughts are on the availability of resources for immigrants in our area.
I think we could always use more. And even, you know, I think even just having more, not even like personal, but I know a lot of people ask for like sheets of information that could, you know, that would be a good idea of, you know, for places where there's not a lot of, you know, immigration discussions. I think we can always use more. I don't think there's, you can never have enough, you know, sources of information.
Yeah, Gerardo, you know, what are the biggest things that you think, you know, people might need resources to help with? You know, what do you think are going to, are, you know, d- DACA recipients, Dreamers, are going to be needing as things change in 6 months?
Definitely got any information. Then they won't know what to do after that. They're going to feel lost for quite a while. Their life is going to change once again, this time for the worse. I think definitely information. Definitely nice to have lawyers, Catholic Church, Steve, around the area for them to just go to. It's nice for them to know that, you know, even if they do get in deportation proceedings, there's still hope. So stuff like that's definitely going to help.
Yeah, John.
The wrong help can hurt. And so we've all probably met someone. If you work in immigration legal practice, or if you're connected with a lot of friends or family who are immigrants, something called notarios, so people who profess to know that they can do your immigration application for you for the government, and oh, you don't need an attorney, or I know how to do this, or I can do your taxes and your immigration application. Then clients will come to Steve and I later after they've been denied and find that there's nothing we can do. In fact, they're going to end up in immigration court to be removed. And so the wrong help can come from even good-meaning, good-intentioned people who want to advocate, as well as from people who think they know it and can make money offering cheaper services. It's important that people really go to qualified and accredited legal representation.
And there are people that are not well-intentioned, unfortunately, in the immigration law world, because in a sense, it's sort of a perfect crime. Immigrants, people who don't have status, are reluctant to come forward when they've been wronged. So people that think criminally are probably attracted to the area more than others. But it's always been a good part of my, you know, a significant part of my practice, trying to correct errors that unauthorized practitioners have made and caused damage to people.
That's Steve Laxton, an immigration lawyer from Sparta, here with us today to talk about how residents of the Cooley region will be impacted by recent changes to immigration law. Also joining us is John David from Catholic Charities in La Crosse, Gerardo Hernandez, a Dreamer from Sparta, and Jocelyn Calixto, a Dreamer from Wisconsin Dells. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Jocelyn, I wonder what your biggest concerns have been since the announcement from President Trump that DACA will be ending. You know, what are the things that, you're most concerned about?
My biggest concern is for, like, the younger DACAs, the Dreamers, the ones that really don't know anything but the U.S. There's some that, you know, were brought here when they were 1 year old, 2 year old, 2 years old, and they... You can tell they're afraid because this is all they know, and they're given that opportunity to be like the rest of their friends. You know, right now they're like in their teenagers and they're getting their driver's license and they're able to do all of that. And that's gonna be taken away from them, and they don't know how to react. Or the DACAs that are in college, you know, they're ready to graduate or have recently graduated. They don't know how to react to this. And I'm afraid of, you know, what's going to happen to them, because they've put so much effort into what they have and what they've been dreaming about, and all of a sudden it's going to stop. That's my biggest fear. It's not for myself, but for the younger Dreamers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously this change will have a big impact on a lot of individuals. John, I wonder if you could talk about how it will impact communities in our area. You know, what are the potential impacts of potentially losing DACA recipients?
Everybody in Wisconsin, in the United States, is a beneficiary of immigrants. I mean, we, as individuals or as a whole, we might have a short memory that unless you're Native American, everyone's an immigrant. Immigrant is a word that the United States invented. Everybody who's immigrated to the United States, whether in this generation or previous ones, is an integral part. As has been mentioned, It's the reason why milk is the price it is per gallon, and it's taken advantage of often in our economy or other producers, and why chicken is $2 a pound, you know, as well as the contributions that legal immigrants make is everywhere. You cannot any more easily remove somebody's parents because they're a citizen and their parents are not than you can the citizen parents from that child that needs them. So we're entirely enmeshed with each other. And while it gets a lot of attention in politics, it's nothing new. It bears repeating that immigration is Catholic Charities offers these services because it comes from a place of faith, and it's not just the last 200 years and the Catholic bishops of the United States. This isn't not just an option, but an order or a law or a mandate that comes back from the Jewish scriptures that we all inherit. And so for thousands of years ago, the Jewish people were told, you shall treat the alien or the foreigner among you the same as you do the citizen, because you were once aliens in the land of Egypt. And that gets repeated later then in Christianity by Jesus Christ, who affirms all of those laws and says in Matthew 25, you shall welcome the stranger. And it's all reaffirmed again when asked, what are the two greatest commandments? And they reach into Jewish scriptures and say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul, and treat your neighbor as yourself. Well, who's my neighbor? Well, the one who shows us that is the Good Samaritan, the foreigner who's acting how everybody ought to act. And Jesus reaffirms that again. And so it's not something that we as a community, whether you're someone of faith or not, really have a choice or an option whether or not to support. I think all of our children, or most of our children in this area, have classmates in many schools throughout western Wisconsin that are vulnerable if Congress doesn't step forward and reaffirm this by making it law.
Gerard, I wonder what your thoughts are on how ending the DACA program will impact communities in our region.
Well, I can speak on behalf of like my friends and family members. I know when I was in that age, around sophomore year, I would say, I was straight A student. Still, because I had those hopes that one day something was gonna happen, and I still didn't really hit me yet. That was still as an immigrant. I knew because I couldn't do sports and all that stuff. So now, when I think of the younger generation, they're very bright people. There's people that won't have the chance to bring out their creativity, their inventions or creativity, or, you know, you might find that these people could have been great policemen or, so I think of like my sister. I see a bright future on her, but she just, you know, a document is going to say she can no longer do what her dream is telling her. So I just think the community is going to miss out on, you know, this great minds, and it's quite sad to think of it that way.
And John mentioned earlier that, you know, there's this potential for Congress that to create a new program to respond to President Trump ending DACA. You know, Steve, I wonder if you could talk about, you know, what are the biggest things that you're really looking for, or people, who are advocates for immigrants are looking for potentially from a new program?
With DACA?
Or with whatever, you know, Congress responds to in the next 6 months or passes.
Well, there's actually four bills out there right now that would provide a pathway to status for Dreamers. There's the Dream Act itself, which is something co-sponsored between in the Senate between Democrat Dick Durbin of Illinois and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. It would provide a very long path to lawful permanent residence and U.S. citizenship, but it would provide that path. There's another bill called the Recognizing American Children Act, sponsored by Carlos Corbello, a Republican
I believe from Florida. There would be a five-year conditional status with that, and then 5 years of lawful permanent residence, and then the DACA beneficiary could apply for citizenship. There is the American Hope Act, sponsored by Democrat Luis Gutierrez from Chicago, from Illinois. You would just have had to, under this bill, you'd just have had to have entered the United States prior to 18. It would provide a three-year conditional status prior to obtaining lawful permanent residence. And then there's the Bridge Act, which is simply a three-year DACA extension to allow additional time for Congress to legislate something with more finality. So those are some of the things that are out there that are being proposed, specifically what the president and Democratic leaders from the House and Senate have in mind at this point in time. I'm not sure anybody apart from the people in the room know exactly what the details are with that. But, the hopeful side of me hopes that, there can be something that's bipartisan that produces a pathway to lawful permanent residence and citizenship for Dreamers. The cynical side of me thinks that there's probably going to be a border wall or some other poison pill for Democrats that's attached to it that will make it unpassable, and then Trump will be off the hook.
What happens if they run the clock out? What happens if, 6 months happens and DACA ends and there still hasn't something been, moved forward?
Well, I think you'll see a lot of public outcry. I think that's building already. I think you're going to see a lot of political pressure on this issue. DACA is very popular. It's even relatively popular on the right. Most people think it's rather silly to punish people who really had no say in their coming into the United States and keep these people under wraps where they're not able to contribute to their fullest potential in their lives. So certainly it would make sense to provide a way forward for people in DACA or the people that would qualify for it. As Joseline's pointed out, there's people that, have not come forward to participate in DACA who are eligible because they're fearful of what might happen. So I think it makes a lot of sense to most Americans, not all, but most, to provide a pathway forward that will allow these young people who are essentially American in their upbringing and their way of life to live out their dreams and provide this country with the best of their efforts.
Steve Laxton, an immigration lawyer from Sparta, joined us during the show we recorded in September to talk about challenges facing young immigrants in the Cooley region who participate in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. He's joined by John David from the Compassionate Community Faith Alliance and Dreamers Gerardo Hernandez from Sparta and Jocelyn Calixto from Wisconsin Dells. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on what changes Dreamers in Western Wisconsin are hoping to see as Congress considers the issue. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today, we revisit a show from earlier this year about the future of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. In September, President Donald Trump announced he would be ending protections for young immigrants who entered the U.S. illegally as children, but gave Congress 6 months to replace DACA. Some DACA recipients, often called Dreamers, are living and working in the Cooley region. During the show in September, we talked with two Dreamers, Gerardo Hernandez from Sparta and Jocelyn Calix from Wisconsin Dells, Steve Laxton, an immigration lawyer who is also from Sparta, and John David, director of the Compassionate Community Faith Alliance here in La Crosse.
You know, we were talking about how changes to DACA could impact communities in our area. But, you know, Gerardo, I wonder if you could talk about, you know, what contributions that you feel like you've made to your community and what contributions maybe we're missing out on if we're, you know, not protecting and supporting, you know, people like you, Dreamers.
I feel like since I've had my DACA, I feel like I'm more open about the subject. I'm able to help people more. Before I was even scared to walk out. Now I speak out when I have my... You know, I speak my mind a little more. The job I decided to get and work for is I'm a sexual assault and legal advocate in Sparta, so I try to help out the community as much as possible. I try to go out of my way sometimes to try to help other people because I understand how it feels to be vulnerable. I don't even know if I said that right. But I understand how it feels to be like in a bad situation, and it doesn't necessarily need to be other immigrants. I'm trying to help out. I try to help pretty much anybody. So it's people like this that understand where's like the lows and now the highs. So I feel like at least the majority of the Dreamers that I've met usually are trying to help out more people because they understand the struggle. They understand that you know, life is beautiful if you let it. And so yeah, I just really think that they're letting go of people that have a good heart because they definitely were thought that way. They've been through some rough times. So yeah, it's just I think that's just the majority of what I think they're missing. They're just missing good people out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jocelyn, I wonder if you also have thoughts on, you know, what contributions you really feel like you bring to the community, other Dreamers bring to the community that they could be missing out on.
Well, the biggest one would be that you know, we speak out a little bit more than before. You know, you're not afraid to call, you know, if there's an accident or if something happened, you know that there's not a problem if you do that. Other than that, like we discussed before, you know, the people that are going to school that are going to be engineers, teachers. My sister, in fact, is studying to be a high school teacher because she wants to impact like the high schoolers, you know, and help them become better people. If she loses her DACA, she's not able to do that anymore. She loves, you know, being part of the community, and she would love to keep going and help, you know, with the younger ones. But if she doesn't have her DACA, how is she going to do that? And as myself, I try to be as involved as I can, you know, with school, with my children, with, you know, even if it's donations, doing, you know, blood donations, whatever. I try to be as involved because I see this as my community. But I know that losing my DACA will be like, now I don't have, you know, I would feel left out. I would feel like I'm not part of the community anymore.
You mentioned speaking out at the beginning, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, why you wanted to you know, speak out about DACA now that things are changing, you know, why that was important to you.
Because I don't think a lot of people know what DACA is, and I've heard a lot of bad, well, you know, a lot of people don't know what DACA is, so they don't know who we are, they don't know what we do. They don't know how we got our DACA or who, or, you know, how this is going to affect us. I try to speak out as much as I can because I want everybody to know that I have DACA, that I'm not a bad person, you know, that I try my best to keep going. I just want them to see that this is what we have and what we know.
Gerardo, I wonder if you also have thoughts about, you know, why it was important to you to talk about this issue.
Mostly for my friends and family. I don't know, I feel for them a lot more than anybody else. And I was really sad all day. And I kind of seen it coming. It's just, yeah, it's hard to think that my sister or, you know, my best friend, my brothers, they won't be able to just say, oh, I got benefits. I'm able to work this holiday and actually get paid, like a holiday pay. Or they were actually able to take the day off and not get fired because of it. I don't know. It's just important to me to you know, battle, at least with words, this great cause, because it's not just affecting my family. If that's the way I feel about my family getting affected, I know there's many other people the same way that are going to get affected the same way. A lot of dreamers that won't have their dream come true just because of some document.
You know, there's been some talk and some reporting on, you know, immigrant families in Wisconsin, in the U.S., choosing to leave, not just since DACA, but, you know, since a lot of the, you know, changing rhetoric around immigration in the U.S. You know, John David, I wonder if you've heard any talk about, you know, people maybe choosing to leave Wisconsin, choosing to leave the U.S. before, you know, something happens.
I haven't yet. And one thing immigration attorneys would encourage everybody to do is not to leave, because you're not going to be able to get back in. One thing you were asking about, what else we see from people who have DACA, and I think more than your average person you'll see in Wisconsin, they're hardworking. And it's not just the two people here today. People have DACA. Even if you look at economists who look at people who recently got legal permanent residency or citizenship, they are less likely than your average person to apply for benefits. People who have DACA are not eligible for anything other than to be here legally and work. They are going to pay into Social Security. They pay into Social Security. They pay their taxes. And they're not eligible for Social Security disability or retirement. You know, people who have DACA are not eligible for anything, be it food share to feed themselves or families, or health insurance. I mean, these are many of the hardships now, or any kind of public housing or housing assistance. And yet they're paying for this Social Security that everyone enjoys. And the hardest thing is when you meet someone who grew up in the United States, who has DACA, and when they find out maybe someday that they can't get their driver's license without DACA, and what's worse is when somebody who's so hardworking has bigger plans to be a professional, like your siblings and friends, they have to pay for college themselves because they're not eligible to file the FAFSA. There's no Stafford loan or subsidized loan for them. So these are the hardest working people you're going to see. So I just wanted to make sure people understand that too about this.
Yeah, another issue we've been hearing about lately is, you know, local law enforcement either, you know, speaking out that they're, you know, maybe not interested in you know, trying to find out these people or report these people. I know the Green Bay police chief came out after the DACA announcement. You know, Steve, I wonder if you've heard anything from local law enforcement about, you know, their thoughts on all these changes and you know, maybe their potential involvement.
I really haven't heard anything of that nature. You know, a lot of people who don't have driver's licenses, you know, living in a rural community, there's not a lot of public transportation. It's hard to get to work without driving. Oftentimes people work on farms in the country and they have to drive and travel a distance to get to work. And, you know, frankly, a lot of, you know, small, very small town police forces, I think it's fair to say, have some additional time on their hands, and they're able to, you know, be involved in things like checking license plates. Well, you know, a lot of people get pulled over. Currently, you know, if you have to do a jail
period of jail time for operating without a license or operating after revocation, you're going to end up in ICE custody very quickly. I just had a case reported to me this morning where the individual had no criminal record apart from operating without license three times, has United States citizen children and in a long presence here, nevertheless was arrested by ICE and taken into ICE custody, and ICE is not giving him a bond, so he'll have to seek bond before the immigration court. So the license issue is pretty important to people. It can result in very dramatic consequences presently.
And, you know, John, you brought up an interesting point that was, you know, kind of being discussed during the break of, you know, options for recipients of DACA, Dreamers. It's not just as simple as maybe filling out an immigration application. I wonder if you can explain more about what you mean by that.
Mm-hmm. Your average person in Wisconsin, if you look at our history as a state, you know, since 1848, the first 100 years of Wisconsin, I'm not talking about Native Americans now, but people who came into Wisconsin, the doors were relatively wide open. The torch of the Statue of Liberty shone, and you could come in and homestead and go before a judge and be a citizen. So the most common question I hear from people is, why don't they just apply? And the truth is, in the first 100 years of Wisconsin history, you could, but about 70 years ago, the immigration law we have today pretty much shut the doors. So unless you have a immediate family member or marry someone who's a citizen and you entered legally, okay, pretty much no new immigration is happening unless you already have a family member who's in the United States or you hit 60 home runs a year, or have $1 million to invest, with narrow exception. And so I think it's important people know that. I think it's also very important that people know that even if you don't have legal status, you can still report serious crimes to police and still get a protection. And we have, in some of our 72 counties in Wisconsin, there's a great number where law enforcement understands this, and people can come forward, not be victimized. Crimes don't have to recontinue just because you don't have legal status yet. You can get it if you report it. Likewise, you don't have to stay in a marriage to a citizen or a permanent resident if you're being abused. There are things that people can do so they can come out of the shadows and seek a path for toward permanent residency and citizenship if they can seek out immigration legal counsel.
Jocelyn, what are the things, you know, moving forward with all these changes in Congress, you know, what are the biggest things that you hope happen? You know, what do you think that would be really helpful for, you know, Dreamers, for, you know, current recipients of DACA?
I think just, you know, if we are able to at least continue DACA, that would be great. But of course, I think we all want, you know, a path to permanent residency and eventually, you know, be able to be a citizen. Because, like I said before, this is what we know. This is where we grew up, and I think we deserve a chance. Yeah.
Yeah, Gerardo, I wonder what your thoughts are on the biggest things that you're hoping come out of these conversations.
I just hope people get informed. There's a lot of misinformed people in this world, that people that thought were my friends before this whole election and everything. I thought I had a lot of good friends, and Some of them were just very misinformed. They knew I was an immigrant, and they still decided to, you know, not really care about the subject. So I really hope that comes out of this is that people get informed, decide to, it's like, oh, you know, there's good people out there that are trying to do good for Wisconsin or for the United States overall. And it's just, you know, see us as another person. That's all we want to be seen as. We don't want to be seen, you know, just someone that just jumped the border and then, you know, it's over here trying to steal their money, food, I don't know, or this decide to think now. But, yeah, we just want to be seen as, you know, somebody else. We want to be heard. We don't want to be in the shadows anymore. We don't, at least I didn't like that at all. And I'm sure there's millions out there that just, it's a bad feeling. You feel like if you could speak out when you're an immigrant, if you ever speak out, you feel like you're gonna get retaliation, eventually end up in a place you don't even know anymore. So yeah, I just hope that, you know, by people getting informed, people actually speak out themselves. Sometimes people decide not to listen to us, but maybe if people, like, you know, United States citizens decide to step up and, you know, say, be like, you know, these people are not bad people. They're going to school with my kids. They're, you know, they're trying to be teachers. They're trying to be police officers. They're, you know, if they just decide to speak up, eventually it's going to be a change. And people like ourselves are eventually going to have our way to our dream.
We've been talking with Gerardo Hernandez, a DACA recipient from Sparta, John David, director of Compassionate Community Faith Alliance in La Crosse, Steve Laxton, an immigration lawyer from Sparta, and Jocelyn Calixto, a dreamer from Wisconsin Dells, about the end of the DACA program and the impact it could have on the Cooley region. The show aired last September, shortly after President Trump signed an executive order to end DACA. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.